News Talk 1620 WTAW. I'm joined on the phone today by Representative Bill Flores of District 17 here in Bryan. How are you doing today, Bill?
I'm doing well. Great to be talking with you today.
The reason we're talking today is you were actually appointed to the Conference Committee on Veterans Health Care. Were you aware of this possibility?
The Speaker's office had reached out to us late last week and then again on Tuesday to ask me if I would be interested in serving as part of the Conference Committee in order to work with the Senate to try to come up with a way to resolve the differences between the Senate's Veterans Health Care Bill and the House's Veterans Health Care Bill. And, of course, given the large population of veterans in our district, it made perfect sense for me to be a part of it.
And there are some significant differences between the two versions of the bill. I know they've changed the name, but it's H.R. 3230. And where are the big points that both chambers agreed on?
Well, I can't tell you exactly where we agree because I haven't read the Senate bill. They essentially took a House bill and stripped everything out of it and then replaced it with their language. So one of the things I have to do as a member of the conference committee is to get my arms around the Senate bill, and I'll do that over the next few days. I can tell you this, just in general, the Senate bill tends to rely more on VA bureaucracy to deal with veterans' health care issues, even if we have veterans that are eligible to go outside of the VA for health care. It still requires a lot of bureaucratic input from an agency that's already struggling to meet its current needs. On the other hand, the House bill has more flexibility built into it, but also tighter cost controls. So we're going to have to find a way to pick the best of the two bills together in order to move forward. The House bill also has greater accountability for the senior leadership of the VA, and the Senate's bill has watered that down pretty badly.
Now, in broad strokes, this bill looks like it would take place over about a two-year period starting this year and going through about 2016. What does it hope to accomplish during that time?
Well, one of the things they're hoping to accomplish is to get the backlog of veterans that are waiting for health care to be able to resolve that. And then secondly, to deal with some of the capacity issues that the VA is having in terms of treating veterans. A lot of the capacity issues the VA is facing are not because of budget issues or manpower issues. They're work process issues, cultural issues, and systems issues. So over that 2 years, hopefully we can get the VA reprogrammed to do a better job of taking care of veterans and still provide outside health care to our veterans.
Okay, I know the CBO report that I'm looking at, I know you said you haven't had a chance to look at the Senate version. I know the House wanted to aim for probably a 14-day window. It says the Senate bill is looking at a 30-day window. How important is timing with getting these veterans access to the health care that they need?
Well, that's one of the things we're going to have to issue. Timing is very important. But practically speaking, a 14-day goal is going to be tough to achieve. I mean, that's one of the reasons that this whole scandal broke anyway, is because the VA had a policy to require that the waiting time for an appointment be 14 days or less, and they failed to meet it. That's the reason they started pencil whipping the numbers. When I talk to my fellow members in Congress that are currently doctors or used to be in the healthcare profession, they say that a 14-day waiting period is unreasonable and probably needs to be somewhere in the neighborhood of 30 days. And that's where the VA originally started when they were coming up their goals, was with a 30-day waiting period. Now, of course, if you have a critical care situation, there will be immediate treatment. There won't be a 14-day wait, but the 14 to 30-day wait, whatever we determine it to be, is only for non-critical issues for primary care.
Okay, and in very basic terms, Soldier Jones or Veteran Jones looking for health care, he goes to the VA how does the process begin if he's not satisfied with the health care at the VA, and how does the VA get them access to, I'm assuming it's private care in this case?
That's correct. He'd go into the community. For instance, if he were in Bryan College Station, he would look at St. Joseph's or all the local doctors and health care providers we have in the community, or Baylor Scott and White. So they'll be able to pick the health care provider of their choice. And so it's essentially a pro-consumer, pro-choice type of plan, if you will. Now, the question you ask is how is that going to be implemented? And that's what we've got to work out in the conference committee, is is how can we make it as seamless and painless as possible for the veteran to be able to get that health care.
There's mention of a pre-authorization necessary for the veteran to go outside of the VA. Would that be necessary, in your opinion?
Well, it's going to depend how it's done. In the Senate bill, there are some flaws in the Senate bill that almost make it fatally flawed. One of them requires that the veteran go through two bureaucratic hoops. One is to get a letter from the Secretary of the VA saying that they are entitled to go outside of the VA. And then the second one says once the veteran takes that letter and goes to his or her private provider, health care provider, that health care provider has to call the VA to get authorization. Well, you know, call the VA today is like 1-800, be on hold forever. And so I see no reason to have two bureaucratic hoops for the veteran to jump through. I think there's a way to come up to do this on a streamlined basis. The other issue we've got to worry about is, again, the VA is a big bureaucracy with over 300,000 employees. It will take them a long time to implement whatever we do. And so we've got to make sure that we put in something that is implementable so that veterans actually have access to health care in the outside world during this two-year window.
Now, not all veterans use the VA, and not all who use the VA are experiencing issues or dissatisfied with their service. How many, either in percentage or hard numbers, how many veterans are we talking about being helped by this bill?
Well, we don't know. We know that 64,000 veterans have tried to get an appointment, but were never able to get an appointment. So I would assume you'd be able to help those to start with. And then we know of another 57,000 veterans that weren't able to get appointments within 90 days. So I'm assuming that we'll be able to help them. So that puts us at just under 120,000 veterans as a start to be able it puts us at 120,000 veterans that we can help with this bill if we get it right.
We're speaking with Congressman Bill Flores of Bryan on his appointment to the Conference Committee for Veterans Health Care. Just a few more quick questions, and that is the two-year nature of this program. Is that just to make sure it works and then there's a possibility of it being extended?
Well, I think there's two things. One is to help us get the backlog of appointments and care for veterans that we seem to have today, to be able to address that. And the second thing is, I think it gives Congress a chance to look more broadly and to look further down the road to see what the VA looks like for the 21st century. What we have now in the VA is a heavily bricks and mortar bureaucratic structure that is not serving our veterans the way that they should be served. And so what we need to think about in Congress over the course of the next 2 years, while we've got the stopgap measure in place, is what does the 21st century VA healthcare system look like? And then what I'd like to see when we're done with this is a healthcare system that is smaller, more agile, that provides better care, and that puts the veterans first. And I think we can do this right, where our veterans get better health care that's more customized for their particular needs, and we'll do it at something that's at a better cost to the taxpayer.
And this is potentially outside the scope of this bill, but I know we've heard people, even all your callers on this station, saying that there's no price that we're not willing to pay as a nation to make sure the veterans get the health care that they need. At the same time, I know there's been discussion about inefficiency within the VA. What sort of things can Congress look at and at adjusting to make sure that everything that needs to be done is done, but potentially increase the efficiency and make sure the dollars are getting to where they're supposed to go?
Let me give you two examples in terms of efficiency and cost. During our testimony this morning, we heard about veterans health care in the state of Maine. And there are some parts of Maine that are fairly remote, and there's no local VA clinic or center for them to go to. And so these veterans are having to travel 250 miles each way in the wintertime in dangerous conditions. And then the federal government reimburses them for their travel to and from the nearest VA system, which is, again, very far away. Well, we're spending $600,000 a year in Maine to reimburse them for travel. I mean, we'll make that up when they can go see their local providers, health care providers. So that's one offset that we can look at. The second thing is your typical VA doctor sees a lot fewer patients per day than does your typical private doctor. And so if we can find a way to get the VA to where it is performing at the same level of efficiency that the private sector does, we will save money and provide better care to veterans by doing that as well.
Two more quick things, and I'll let you answer them both in succession. If private providers want to are interested in being a part of this, what might they be able to do? And finally, what's the timeline that we're looking at for potentially passing a compromised bill?
Well, first of all, the state of Texas under Governor Perry and also the Texas Medical Association are in the process of developing a registry so that doctors who are interested in treating veterans can get their name out into the veterans domain, if you will, so that when the system actually gets started and up and running, that veterans will know who the doctors are that are seeing veterans. As far as timing, it's hard for me to know at this point in time. Each of the Senate and the House showed pretty good urgency in passing their respective bills. The Speaker, came out of the box today quickly to appoint conferees from the Republican side of the aisle. And my guess is that the other side of the aisle, as well as our colleagues in the Senate, will appoint people quickly, and we can have our first meeting and start getting this done. If it were Bill Flores totally in control, I would say we could have this wrapped up by the end of July, and within 90 days, the VA would have the systems in place to be able to allow veterans to go out into the private sector for health care. But I don't run this operation, so I don't know exactly how long it's going to take. This is also the first conference committee that the Veterans Affairs Committee has had since 1999. So there may be some dust we have to shake off of the process as we work with the Senate to come up with a solution for our veterans. But we'll work diligently and with urgency to get it done as quickly as we can.
Is there anything else you'd like to add on the occasion of your appointment?
Yes, what I'd like to do is I'd like to thank Speaker Boehner for the confidence that he has shown in me to be part of this conference committee to help take care of our nation's veterans, which are one of our nation's greatest assets.
That was Bill Flores on his appointment to the Conference Committee on Veterans Healthcare here on News Talk 1620 WTAW.